Blog Talk Radio.
Blessings from the Darkness is an eclectic collection of writings by a talented and diverse group of writers and published authors in dedication of and in support of our dearest friend, the award-winning and best-selling author Yvonne Mason and her son. All sales of this anthology, present and future, are donated to her in support of her son, who at the time of this publication has been ill and out of work and struggling to support his family due to an undiagnosed illness. Yvonne has been an inspiration, selflessly supportive, and a dear friend to many aspiring writers and indie authors. She believes in paying it forward, offering her knowledge and insights and friendship to kindred souls. Yvonne has a saying, she threatens to let loose the flying monkeys when there is wrongness in the lives of those near and dear to her. So after bringing us together for a successful and fun-filled double anthology by Yvonne, including notable authors and first-time published writers, and after learning about the continued troubles of her son and his family, we came together as such monkeys to fly free, far, and wide in what we do best, G.L. Lentz. This book can be purchased at Amazon.com, Amazon Kindle, Barnes & Noble, and www.blackbedsheetbooks.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Off the Chain on a Thursday night. I am your host, Yvonne Mason, and yes, that was a shameless piece of promotion. I do that. That particular book I received no royalties on. The publisher receives no royalties on it. None of the authors receive any royalties on it because all of that money does indeed go to my son, who is ill, and they still don't know what's wrong with him. He was an over-the-road truck driver for over 20 years, made pretty good money, and now he can't do anything. And believe it or not, he has been totally denied his disability. Go figure. Bureaucracy at its best. So, any of you out there that love short stories and some horror, buy Blessings from the Darkness, because trust me, it does go directly to my son, and I thank you in advance because you are all blessings. Tonight, we have another blessing. We have a young man who is an author who released a book back in December, and when I read the synopsis of the book, which I'm not going to tell you the title of yet because you got to stay for the whole show, I'm kind of like that, and then I read his story, I had to have him on the show, because if anyone understands children who are ripped apart from families, children who really are abused and for whatever reason in that abuse have to leave their families and dumped on strangers, this man does. And I am very honored and I'm very humbled to have him on my show because this man gets it. It is author Robert Eggleton, and I'm just going to read you what I put up on the show when I said it, and I want y'all to listen, and I want you to take it to heart. Now, it's not to say we're not going to go off the chain and have fun, because we are, but to me, this is a very, very special show, and I so appreciate Robert being here tonight, and this is what he says. I was born into an impoverished family in West Virginia. My alcoholic and occasionally abusive father suffered from PTSD. He had been captured by the Nazis during World War II and had night terrors. My mother did the best she could, but I had to begin working as a child to feed my family. I started paying into the U.S. Social Security Fund at age 12. Ladies and gentlemen, this gentleman went to work at age 12. Where they took taxes out. So when I hear people say, I'm going to live off the government because I can't find the job, horse pucky. I dreamed of a brighter future for my family and have continued to work for the next 52 years. In the eighth grade, I won the school short story contest, God Sent, which was about a semi-truck driver so consumed with theological debate that he caused a terrible accident. As it often does, however, life got in the way, and my dream of becoming a rich and famous author went by the wayside. I worked and went to school, never finishing any more stories that I started, mostly because I was just too exhausted. I started college in 1969, and except for a poem published in the state student anthology and another poem published in a local alternative newspaper, my creative juices were spent writing handouts for civil rights and anti-war activists and on class assignments. I graduated in 1973 with a degree in social work. Afterward, I worked in the field of adolescent substance abuse treatment as I attended graduate school. My creative writing was still on hold, suppressed and depressed. After earning an MSW in 1977, I focused on children's advocacy for the next 40 years. My heartfelt need to write fiction was dissipated somewhat by the publication of social services models, grants, research, investigative and statistical reports about children's programs, child abuse, and delinquency. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I admire this man. I admire this man on many, many levels. And without further ado, good evening, Robert. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Yvonne, for inviting me to talk a little bit about myself, although it was a great introduction, and also, most importantly, about my debut novel, Rarity from the Hollow.
We're going to get to that. But as Johnny Carson used to like to do, he liked to say, well, we're going to have so-and-so on tonight along with our other guests. But first, a message from these sponsors. They get people there to watch. So we're going to say, but first, we're going to learn a little bit about Robert. Now, I did the brief history. If you can and are comfortable with it, explain your desire and your passion to go from where you were in life to helping children.
Oh, that's such an easy question. When you give, you receive. Many folks look at giving as if it's a sacrifice. Maybe they've just not given enough because the giver is the recipient. I've benefited so many more times greatly than the hundreds and hundreds of kids that I've met over the years, the ones that I've worked long and hard trying to protect, to give a voice to. I'm the one. I'm the beneficiary of all that hard work.
Would it be fair to say that because of the environment that you grew up in, and it wasn't right or wrong, it just was, your father couldn't help? Because you got to remember, during that time period, when the men came back from World War II, we didn't know about PTSD. We didn't know about shell shock. We didn't know about the emotional and mental things that men suffered when they returned from war. And it wasn't talked about. Men just sucked it up and went on. But then it created unintended consequences. So would you say that because of the environment that you lived in, that made you able to relate to children who truly have been abused? I'm not talking about children that are yanked out of houses because CPS just went in and took them. I'm talking about children that really are abused by families, by friends, by whatever. You were able to relate to them on a level that somebody else couldn't.
I think that's true. Also, I had a great mom. She had a heart of gold, as big as a house. It didn't matter what your who you knew, what color you were. None of that mattered. If she could help, that's what she wanted to do. And she was a very positive role model for me. And I have my younger sister died of breast cancer, which is that still hurts to think about. And I've got another younger sister. I was the oldest, and a younger brother. But she was such a positive role model that helped build empathy for all of her children. She had empathy for my father before PTSD. She knew what was going on. And so she loved him despite the domestic violence, despite the intoxicated episodes of anger outbursts, despite the night terrors. The love was always there.
When you went to work at 12 years old, what was your first job?
My first job that they took taxes out on. Now, keep in mind, child labor laws had not been enacted.
Right.
But I was working, pretty much from childhood. I remember cutting grass with a sickle. I was so proud of my first lawnmower. I had to feed the family. There were no such thing as food stamps back then. And my father couldn't hold down a job. He'd work for a couple weeks and then lose it. He was proud of me. I cleaned behind a grocery store. It's, of course, now out of business, and I was paid in dented and unlabeled canned goods, and crushed boxes of cereal and macaroni that I brought home to feed the family. The first official tax-paying job I had was at a drugstore. It was called Cohen's then, but now it's part of a national chain. Still, some of the locations are the same, Rite Aid. And I stocked shelves and cleaned and things like that after school and on weekends. And that's when I first started paying into the Social Security Fund. And it's really what's really cool is when you get those reports from Social Security and look back and you see that date and realize that you were 12 years old.
And what is so honorable about that is, sadly, we seem to have generations of children and some adults who walk around with their hand out and say, I'm entitled. Never one time did you, and you live in a state that's pretty depressed for the most part. Would you not agree with that?
We have a big budget shortfall, and I'm very worried. As a person who cares about community-based social services, things that truly gets people on the feet, the programs that empower children, that empower victims, I'm very worried that there may be budget cuts because we have such a shortfall in our state budget. And so, yes, I live in a depressed area. But frankly, I've never made, although I've received prominence with a lot of nonfiction publications, television appearances, interviewed dozens of times by the local news, established programs, made presentations, including national presentations. The bottom line is I've really not made very good money. I work for community-based agencies, which didn't have much money to pay because that was what was in my heart. That was the heartfelt desire. That's why I went into the field. And, yes, our programs are at risk because the state budget is in such poor shape. They're looking for something like $500 million in revenue shortfall projected for this coming fiscal year. And so I'm just keeping my fingers crossed.
Now, ladies and gentlemen, let me tell you where Roberts writings are. His reports, now he wrote reports for models, for, let me get here now. Models for serving kids into the community instead of sending them off to big institutions, research on foster care drift, that is, kids bouncing from one home to the next and never finding permanency, statistical reports on child abuse and delinquency. Now, many of his reports were published by the West Virginia Supreme Court and now are archived by the West Virginia Division of Culture and History. So this man's been around the block a time or two, and he knows what he's talking about. Would it be fair to say that if these programs are cut, that some of these children may not be able to go out into the working world?
Well, to be frank, children will die if these programs are eliminated. One of the reports that I'm credited with being the primary author of was West Virginia's first child fatality maltreatment death report. I looked at the case of a young man in which the courts, the social workers, everybody involved with the case presumed they knew the intent of the law, and the kid was murdered after being returned to a supposed father that he had never met.
Jesus Christ.
He was dead in 2 weeks after having been given to that man. Both the biological mother and the biological father are hopefully still in prison. When they came to get the kid from the welfare department, they had 8 trash bags full of clothes tied on top of the car and 6 or 8 kids in the back seat, filthy, and the social workers let them take that kid. Now, that makes no sense.
Well, and the sad part is, Robert, when they need to keep the children away from abusive foster care people and natural parents, they don't. When they need to put them back, they don't. It becomes a spinning wheel.
There's a lot of things to fix, that's for sure. But
absolutely.
One of the things that I found in some research was that the child's voice is seldom heard, and that's something I'm very proud of in the novel, my debut novel, because it uses a colloquial child voice to tell the story. Her name is Lacey Dawn. But in the research, what it found was that when children are listened to, whether they're talking to a classmate, a teacher, a social worker, when they're listened to, it increases the odds of the successful resolution of whatever problem it is. And contrary, when children are opinion and voice is simply disregarded, that increases the odds of the placement, the foster home, whatever the resolution that's attempted will not work. And so children's input into planning, not that they get what they want by any stretch of the imagination, but that they are listened to is critical to the outcome of a lot of interventions that we attempt in the best interests of the children.
Do you find that, as a general rule, in that it's not just in the bureaucracy of the system that children are not listened to, but we don't listen to children at all most of the time? We don't listen to them when they say they're hurting because their friend died. We don't listen to them when they say, I have something on my mind, and while it might be insignificant to us, it's very important to them. We discount them. We discount their feelings. We discount their thoughts. Like they don't matter.
I think that's in general true, but especially true when you have very busy professionals who are performing different roles, maybe not understood by the child, such as in a court proceeding. The child, you know, is wondering what the heck's going on. And nobody's ever asking the child, or that's an overstatement. Often the child's voice, even when they have a guardian ad litem, is not fully represented.
I agree.
There's an organization that I admire, and I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's Bikers Against Child Abuse.
Yes.
And it's an international group of motorcycle enthusiasts that volunteer in court to help the child speak for her or himself. And that is such a wonderful organization. I wish that we had, we have one local here, but not in Charleston. And I sure wish that there's a lot of bikers out there, and what a wonderful volunteer activity helping out abused and neglected kids in court. That, you know, they've done God's work, that's for sure.
I would love to get some of them on this show because they really help speak for those children.
I agree. Would make a great guest.
So see if you can help me out. If you know that group up there, see if I can get them on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, you heard it first. Now, I read something, and I'm not sure if I've got the statement that I read. I may have it skewed a little bit, but I'm just going to read what I wrote down. Like I said, I have notes, ladies and gentlemen. This show is not scripted, so we have no idea where it's going to go. But I wrote down, from victim to survivor to empowered, staying in the past has no power, only shackles.
Rarity from the Hollow is a story of victimization to empowerment. In a nutshell, a little girl, an 11-year-old victim, whose father had PTSD and night terrors similar to mine, a worn-out mom with low self-esteem and teeth that were rotting out, who didn't have her GED and had never learned to drive, the little girl negotiates the best deal. She'll help save the universe if she gets some help curing her parents. I think the message is that in many cases, abused and neglected kids, while they'll never forgive or forget what's been done to them, they still love their parents on some level. And often, even abusive parents, deep down inside, love their kids, and there's other contributing factors. It's a complex social problem, substance abuse, mental health problems. If you've got a mom with, for example, bipolar disorder, who cannot afford her medications, or for some reason is non-compliant with the medications, you've got a potential child abuse victim. Now, I'm not going to point the finger and blame mommy. She has a mental health problem that she was born with. Nevertheless, that child has to be protected. It's a complex situation. The children know all too well that mommy's got a problem. A lot of us, we just get mad and want to lock mommy up. Well, maybe she does need to be locked up. Certainly people need to pay the consequences for their behaviors. But that child still, they won't forgive the mom for whatever she's done. Then you've got the other issues like substance abuse or alcoholism, which dramatically affected my father and my family. You were talking about shell shock. My dad became an alcoholic during World War II. Before, he was a college football player, popular, handsome. He was a prisoner of war. He had been stabbed. They gave him alcohol to basically to shut him up because he was screaming. And he came back from World War II an alcoholic. He treated his post-traumatic stress disorder with alcoholism. There are so many otherwise good parents out there that have fallen and do terrible things because of serious substance abuse problems. There's a lot of correlates to child abuse. Poverty is a correlate. It's certainly no excuse. There is no excuse ever for harming a defenseless child. But there are correlates. And the stress of paying the bills, sometimes working two or three jobs trying to make ends meet, that can be a correlate to losing it and doing something that you regret for the rest of your life. So many of these social, my novel is filled with social commentary. It also has political allegory in it. Now, there is no political advocacy. There's no positions taken on issues. I don't believe that I should write such a thing, such as Animal Farm, which it's been compared to, especially with its most recent book review. That was on, January the 6th. A book reviewer who had worked, she is an engineer, she worked for NASA for 21 years. And the closing lines of her review of my novel was, "Brilliant satires such as this are genius works of literature in the same class as Orwell's Animal Farm. I can picture American lit professors sometime in the distant future placing this masterpiece on their reading list." Now, one difference between what I write and what Orwell wrote is I don't preach. I'm not going to advocate for a position. One person may read it and find one thing, and the next reader may find something totally opposite. I don't like to read preachy material, and I certainly don't want to write it. So that's one very big difference. But there's a lot of social commentary that that we've talked about, including bipolar disorder, extreme capitalism. There's a little bit of touches a little bit on religious, local, economic development, and of course poverty and domestic violence, like we talked about, and veterans returning home from especially the Gulf War. With I'm hopeful that if veterans read this novel and they are symptomatic for post-traumatic stress disorder, that'll encourage them to seek help because we know a lot more about it than we did when my dad suffered from it. And it is treatable if people will pursue the treatment. I mean, you know, there's a time to be tough. There's a time to be practical and solve problems.
And burying one's head in the sand and saying there's nothing wrong does not solve that problem. It only exacerbates it. And
yes,
you're right.
It certainly
we have come a long way since World War II. I agree with you. But we've come a long way since Vietnam. We're finally addressing those things that returning veterans have had to deal with for centuries, and they never could express it before because we've moved away from the, and I don't use this term disparagingly, but it's the closest thing I can think of macho man soldier coming home and saying, "I'm okay, I survived." Well, no, you're not. And there's nothing wrong with acknowledging the fact that you need help to be made whole again.
I agree. And the first step, of course, is acknowledging that there's a problem. And so hopefully, as I said, I'm hopeful that abusive parents that might read. Now, advanced reader copy of this novel circulated for quite a while. And it received quite a few reviews. Not everybody praised it as highly as the last review. Some people didn't understand it. The political allegory was not nearly as obvious until Donald Trump became a household name. And like I said, there's no advocacy in this. And it certainly is not putting down Donald Trump or putting down the counterpart. Donald Trump is called Mr. Prump in the novel, and the counterpart is Mr. Rump, and that's based loosely on Bernie Sanders, who ran for the primary as the Democratic Socialist. Bernie Sanders. Now, again, there's nothing. It doesn't take sides. It doesn't. There's nothing political except for the allegory that's in the novel. But in any case, the novel had circulated for quite a while. It received 2 gold medal awards by major review organizations. One was from Awesome Indies. I don't know if you've heard of that organization, but it's quite a feather in the cap to get a gold medal from them. What they found was what they described the novel as is a hillbilly version of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Only instead of the Earth being destroyed to make way for a hyperspace bypass, Lacey Dawn must. The author has managed to do what I would thought impossible, taking serious subjects like poverty, ignorance, abuse, and written about them with tongue-in-cheek humor without Eggleston sucks you into the holler, dunks you in the creek, rolls you in the mud, and splays you in the sun to dry off. Tucked between the folds of humor are some profound observations on human nature and modern society that you have to read to appreciate. It's a funny book that most sci-fi fans will thoroughly enjoy. The early tragedy, and this is so true when I was working with actual child abuse victims. I retired a little over a year ago. I was a children's psychotherapist. It was an intensive day program for children that fall in the category of severely emotionally disturbed kids. Instead of going to school, the kids came in the daytime to the mental health program. Part of my job was to facilitate group therapy sessions for those kids. And that's where I met my protagonist, Lacey Dawn, in one of those group therapy sessions. The story is of tragedy, victimization to empowerment. The early tragedy leads to comedy and satire. Now, that's the perfect closure of an actual child abuse case, where the kid can say and the parent can say, the past is the past. The kid says, I'll never forgive you, but I'll always love you. And they go on to have a decent relationship with each other. This idea of good guy, bad guy, evil versus good, and you reduce it all to some simplistic concept just isn't real. As I said before, oftentimes the parents deep down inside regret what they've done. Now, not always. There are some pretty crazy people I've met. I'm glad that the real life Lacey Dawn's dad is still in prison where he belongs.
Well, what jump-started you to put this beautifully written book, I have not read it yet, but it is on my list, to put this beautifully written work on paper, was there something that happened in your life that you said, okay, I'm doing this now, or did you just one day decide, I'm not getting any younger and writing is my passion? What made you finally get this book in print?
Well, I'm sure not getting any younger. I started working for the Mental Health Center in 2002. All my other jobs before then, for 35 years or so, or thereabouts, in children's services, had involved writing of some type, whether they were investigative reports or service models or policy. A large part of my job, I was in the field when a lot of stuff was new and changing. I founded programs. I established West Virginia's emergency shelters for kids, and that's where half of the author proceeds are being donated to child abuse prevention programs operated by Children's Home Society. I worked there in the early 80s. In any case, once I took the job, and I am licensed, my license is still active, although it's going to expire, and I probably won't renew it. It's just the money, you know, whether I decide to or not, since I'm not really practicing anymore. But I'm licensed in the clinical area of treating people with diagnosing and treating people with mental health-related problems. And so as a psychotherapist, I didn't really have much writing, and I'd kind of become addicted, dependent on writing. It was the way that it met something, some kind of need inside of me. And so that was sort of building. And so I was piddling around with it a little bit. I won a first place in an international poetry competition. And so I was messing around with poetry and some short stories and so forth. And one day, it was in 2006, I was, and the only writing part, and this may be the next book that I have published, is I created quite a few original written therapeutic exercises for kids who have been abused, kids that had other mental health problems like ADHD or oppositional defiant disorder. And so I'm in group. I'm facilitating a children's group one day. And this little girl, she's 11 years old. She had long, stringy brown hair, skinny as they come. I couldn't even say she was cute. She looked kind of tomboyish. And she started talking. Now, the other kids, mostly in the program, what they disclosed was about the horrors of their abuses and their feelings. And they would open up, and that was good. It was helpful. And hopefully the disclosures led to resolutions. Well, this little girl, she had just gotten into the program. Instead of just talking about what the meanest daddy on earth, she started talking about her hopes and her dreams for the future. She wanted a permanent family, somebody that would love her and protect her. Well, she's my inspiration. She got me thinking again about my hope and dream after winning the 8th grade short story contest. And I started writing. She became my protagonist. She is the Lacey Dawn of the Lacey Dawn Adventures Project, the hopes and dreams for the future.
Now, it would be fair to say, Robert, would it not, that this is a case of, and the people that have listened to my show know probably where I'm going with this. This is a case of learning something from a child and paying attention when that child talked.
I think if you get to the point where you bring her onto the show, what you'll hear her say is that I used to be her therapist, but that now she's Robert Eggleton's therapist. Yes. It's so critical to listen and for the speaker to recognize that you hear them, really hear them. But the bottom line is that this little girl inspired me and gave me a vision for the creation of the story of an empowered victim taking on the evils of the universe, the most unlikely savior of the universe, somebody who convinced Bernie Sanders to talk to Donald Trump to solve the great big problem that's threatening our world. Of course, this all takes place on an off-world setting that's pretty outrageous. The off-world setting is an abbreviated form of shop until you drop. It exemplifies extreme capitalism. It's a huge shopping mall and the center of economic governance for the universe. And so a lot of action takes place on this in this wild, crazy adventure. One of the early reviews of the novel was by the Missouri Review, which is, of course, a very prominent book review organization. Now, this was of a draft of the novel, but the reviewer, Evelyn Summers, found that the novel went from gritty realism, because that's the early scenes, to wild sci-fi fantasy, and then she commented, it was quite a ride. So that was one of the first early positive reviews of the novel. She got it. She understood it.
So would it be safe to say that also in this book, and I'm going to read a direct quote, that it is silly to live in the past, that demons, no matter how scary, can be evicted, and that nothing controls our lives more so than the decisions we make ourselves, end quote.
I couldn't have said it better myself.
Well, that is your quote.
I'm
assuming that this is what happens in the book, that she understands that our past does not define us. Yes, it's a defining moment in our lives, but we cannot allow it to define us because we are empowered ourselves to make our own decisions, just like your little girl in front of you when she said, these are my hopes and dreams. I'm not going to live back there where all that bad stuff happened. I'm not there anymore. I'm moving forward.
That's so true. I've also worked with quite a few adult survivors of child maltreatment. And one of the pitfalls that has blocked them moving forward is reliving the past over and over again. And there's the Lord, or the Serenity Prayer is a good example and applies to a lot of therapeutic relationships. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. And that is so true, but living in the past is one of the primary blocks to, and if the person can just accept and move forward, anybody can have a brighter future. And so I'm hopeful that people, and I was going to say before, but I kind of spaced out, people who have reviewers, this novel in one form or another, and the final edition was just released, as you told your listeners, but in other forms it's been reviewed, and at least a dozen book reviewers have privately disclosed to me that that they were survivors of child maltreatment themselves. And I was concerned, of course, I didn't want anybody to read my book that could be triggered and then experience discomfort because of personal experiences. None of the reviewers reported anything like that to me, happily so. There are some people who decided not to read it because of past experiences. I'm glad they decided not to. The early scenes are harsh. And so your listeners need to know that the early tragedy leads to comedy and satire. And if the third scene is the worst as far as, you know, really, you know, challenges comfort zones. It was, now nobody, there's no blood and gore or no vampires, werewolves. There's no sex scenes or anything like that. But the third scene is very powerful. It's one of domestic violence when Lacey Dawn's dad essentially beats up his mom, her mom, but all she's really injured, she gets a bloody lip. It's not like she's, and she gets switched. That's the harshness. That's the harshest aspect of this. You know what switching is?
Oh, yes.
Okay. One reviewer didn't know, wrote a book review, and then later said he thought that he just assumed it was something like a sport or soccer or something. I remember cutting a switch.
So do I. But you know what? It didn't leave any lasting effects on me. It just was. Because I had some of the best parents in the world, and it didn't. It hurt for a minute. It hurt my feelings more than anything. But it wasn't abuse.
I agree, and that was one of the complicated issues with Dwayne. Dwayne believes spare the rod and spoil the child. And it wasn't until later in the story that he achieved insight that what he had actually done was to be abusive to Lacey Dawn and to his wife. Her name is Denise. But all the time he thought that he had the right as a husband, that he had the right as a father to exert discipline. And so a lot of it depends on the cultures, how you define child abuse, in my opinion. Well, not just my opinion, but based on a lot of different studies, depends on culture, religion, and sociological factors. Now, I certainly did not feel that any discipline my mother ever gave me, which wasn't much. I was the breadwinner, for one thing. All I did was work. But I got switched a couple times, and I certainly never believed that was abusive at all. A lot of it depends on the application, in my opinion. And
I
the
agree.
Child's Yeah. And so, again, this story, my novel, does not take a position on anything. It doesn't say that spanking a child, for example, is child abuse. I would never dare say that because who am I so presumptuous to say that corporal punishment is always wrong in every case? It's certainly not. Now, there is a lot of corporal punishment that can be abusive and done misguided. But on the other hand, there's a lot of it that's done with love and concern. And children know the difference. They can sense the difference.
And irregardless of what this generation of parents believes, or even the generation before that, children as well as adults, and discipline is a broad word, but we all need discipline. Even God disciplines us. We discipline ourselves.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So for someone to say, well, that's discipline is a bad word, no, it isn't. It's a matter of learning self-control. It's a matter of getting on to one's child or an adult or even oneself. I discipline myself all the time when I screw up. You dummy, what'd you do that for?
Uh-huh.
So when someone says, well, discipline is wrong, no, it isn't, because even God disciplines us. We all need to be
I think one of the things that helped Dwayne achieve insight is he left scars.
Uh-huh. And now,
that's problematic.
That's a problem.
When a kid can look down and see a permanent scar on her, or scars, when she is embarrassed to go swimming because of the scars or to dress for gym class, there's something wrong.
That's a problem. Well, before, would you believe the site was almost up?
Oh, no.
I told you it does, but now you have to come back. So I want to bring you back in either June or July. You pick the month, and then I'll send you the date.
It's your choice. Just let me know.
I'll make
myself available.
And I want you to tell me, yes, Lacey Dawn's ready to come out, because they got to read this.
Lacey Dawn came out. It was released on December the 5th. It's available. Amazon's the most popular place. And so if you remember the title, Rarity, R-A-R-I-T-Y, From the Hollow. It's received two gold medals.
What else have you got coming out?
Well, the next novel is Ivy, and I'm kind of holding up a little bit. It's about ready. I've learned a lot from book reviewers, and I'm going to make some changes in it. But it's pretty close to send off to an editor. I'm hoping Doghorn Publishing is a traditional small press located in Leeds. That's who published Rarity from the Hollow. And I've never spent a penny on the publication, on the promotions, on anything. It's a good thing because I don't have hardly any money. But it's a traditional press. Which means the publisher paid for everything. The downside is, because it's a small publisher, there's no advertising budget. And so that's pretty much up to me. I would love to come back. Rarity from the Hollow, H-O-L-L-O-W-R-A-R-I-T-Y. It's won two gold medals. It was named, along with a Stephen King novel, An Alien, as one of the best books of 2015, by a Bulgarian book review critic, an earlier version of it, and it's received 26 five-star reviews by independent book reviewers on Amazon, 43 four-star reviews, which will probably, if I can get the reviewers to take a second look at the final edition, that'll probably go up. Now, not everybody liked it.
Before we run out of time, and I apologize for cutting you short, but we're literally going to run out of time. I need for you to tell folks where you can be found.
Well, Lacey Dawn Adventures is on Facebook. I'm on. Also on Twitter. On Twitter, I'm Robert. You spell my name, Robert. My last name is spelled E-G-G-L-E-T-O-N. I'm Robert Eggleton 1 on Twitter. And that's probably the two best ways. I'm also on LinkedIn and Google Plus. If you remember my name, you'll definitely be able to get in touch. Probably the easiest way, since it's so popular, is on Facebook. And if you just remember Lacey Dawn, you'll find it.
Lacey Dawn. And ladies and gentlemen, I'm telling you, everybody needs to read this book, and everybody needs to hook up with Robert and help get this book out there. Tomorrow night we're off. On Saturday night at 8 o'clock, Gary Starter will be back. He's got a new book. It's going to be fun to talk about that. Now, this morning I ran the numbers again. And just on this show alone, we have 2,924 listeners. We are very, very close to 3,000 listeners just on this show. So if you have a passion, a business, a book, music, art, or you want to talk politics, I'll talk politics with you. If you got a platform, I'll talk the platform with you. That's what this show is about. That's why we call it Off the Chain. I love my authors because I get such a diverse group of authors that come and share their life and share their works and share things with me. Overall, we are a little more than 2,000, having 10,000 listeners between this show and all the podcasts. We are on iTunes, we are on YouTube, we are on Stitcher, FM.com, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, Spreaker, MixCloud, and Podcast.com. So if you don't find the show on Blog Talk Radio Off the Chain, look on one of those. We are heard all over the world, ladies, even little countries I never even heard of. So if you've got a passion, if you've got a platform, if you've got a business, if you've got a book, music, artwork, or you just want to chat for an hour, come on this show, because I'm going to tell you, you will get a following. And Robert, I'm going to bring you back either June or July. I'll have to get back in my office and see where we are, and I'll send you some notes, and maybe by then Ivy will be pretty much ready to be out.
I hope so. I want to make sure that Rarity gets a good, I achieve enough name recognition with it. And so it's a matter of strategy. Everybody's got their own way of trying when people don't know you. And so I am so appreciative. Thank you so much, Yvonne.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you spending an hour with me.
It's sure gone fast.
It did. I told you it would. And will you hook up with your biker friends up there and see if they'll come on the show, and if they've got a Facebook page, get them to hook up with me, because I would really like to talk to these guys and get them out there, so that I've seen these guys in action, and they do a great work.
Sounds great.
And when you come back, we'll talk about Rarity from the Hollow again, and hopefully Ivy will be ready. And Robert, you are such a blessing. You are so amazing. I could just sit and listen to you talk all night, because you've got it. You understand it. And the world is a better off place with you in it.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, normally I ask my guests what they would say for dreamers, but I'm going to do that because we're down to like 1 minute. If you've got a dream, you're never too old, you're never too young, and it's never too late unless you're on your deathbed, last breath, and someone says, what regrets do you have? Do not be that person. Do not be the person that says, well, I shoulda, woulda, coulda, because I'm going to tell you, I published my first book at 54 years old. I'm 65 now. I started this radio show last July. It's not even a year old. We're already over the top. It's never too late. I have wonderful people like Robert on my show. You have a dream. You live that dream. You own it. No matter what the dream is, you own that dream. And you make it real. Because you will touch someone else in ways that you never knew. Is that correct, Robert?
Absolutely correct. Yvonne, you're a great person.
Well, thank you, my friend. You're an absolutely amazing human being. I can't wait to get you back on here. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're running out of time, so I will, and Robert, don't hang up yet. So, I'm going to say this. Love each other, love yourself, like yourself. Live today. That's all you got. And Saturday night, we'll see you at 8 o'clock. Until then, so don't forget, tonight when I get done, I will upload this show for you. I'll upload the link and tag you in it. And then I will tag you in the podcast, and we're just going to see this thing take off. I have no doubt it's going to take off.
I hope so. Thank you so much.
Oh, honey, thank you. I appreciate you coming on the show. I could just listen to you talk all night. So I'm going to get off from here and go take care of this, and I will send you a note for the next show. Save the phone number and the time.
Okay.
And maybe one of these days I'll get back up to West Virginia, because I really want to go back to Harper's Ferry. That was my favorite place to visit when I was headed north.
Wait till spring.
We were there in June. It was beautiful. It was absolutely beautiful.
Yes,
I'm going to get off from here. I'm going to get off from here. And again, I appreciate you so much. Thank you for being a blessing in my life.
Thank you. Bye.
And we'll talk later. Good night, hon.
Night. How to do it.